so good to be back. Monday is so great, and we got a great Monday for you. Really interesting conversations today. I think you will find two really interesting conversations. Second hour, Tim Staples is going to be here. We're going to talk about what did the early church believe about Jesus. You hear all kinds of things about what the early church believed or didn't believe or that kind of thing. Well, we actually have a great deal of evidence about what the early church believed about Jesus, and we're going to talk about that second hour. First hour, well, some of what we're going to talk about has got to include Benedict the 16th, because our guest is an aficionado, I think would be the proper term for Benedict the 16th. Dr. Matthew Ramage is an associate professor of theology at Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. He's the author of several books, participated in others as a contributing author or a translator, and his writings often center on the work of Pope Benedict the 16th. And the newest book, the 2020 book, is no exception. The Experiment of Faith, Pope Benedict the 16th on Living the Theological Virtues in a Secular Age. Dr. Matthew Ramage, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here, Si. Thanks.
Monday's fun because we get to kind of usually we have the energy and the brain power now. We're rested from the weekend. We can talk about serious things. And this one, this idea of the experiment of faith. Well, first of all, maybe I should just start with that. What do you mean by the experiment of faith? I thought faith was a virtue. Why not the virtue of faith?
Yeah, when I first heard that expression, I was struck by it. One reason, because in college, I studied the sciences until I had this big conversion and just fell in love with the Bible and had to change. But, you know, experiment, usually you apply that in the sciences. Well, Benedict has a lot of affinity with thinkers like Henri de Lubac and others, Communion and Liberation followers. We'll know that Giussani, you know, and this is the language they use. And what he's trying to go for is what we call a personalist approach, that you have to live it. You have to try it, that you can't prove the faith from the outside. You have to get your hands dirty. And just like you have to do in a laboratory, you get dirty, you get smelly. You have to live this thing out to see its truth. That's what he means by the experiment.
So faith then is not just an assent to a set of propositions. Like Jesus says, the proposition, I am God. Let's just say, and the faithful response then would be, I believe you. So, but you're saying faith is something different than just assenting to propositions.
You know, that's been fun because one of the things I do is I like to put Benedict in dialogue with Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
And that's Benedict's own call. As you look at the ancients and you look at the moderns. And we've talked before, I believe, on my Jesus book about that. You can't understand the Bible unless you look at the fathers, the medievals, and the modern interpreters. And so the same thing holds true if you want to understand what faith is. So, you know, faith, it is a proposition. It includes truth. And a lot of people make this mistake. They'll say, well, faith is just good feelings, you know.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
And in fact, that's one of my leading quotes in there. I went through everywhere where Benedict engages Friedrich Nietzsche, who is one of the greatest critics of our faith ever. And Nietzsche says that faith, any faith is quote unquote true as long as it makes you feel good. And so Benedict has no time for that. No, faith has true content, but it also is lived out. So we could talk about as much as you want, but faith is a total way of life that includes your mind, your heart, and your actions.
And it's okay. So, I'm thinking of somewhere I read in that you wrote, and this probably comes from Benedict too. So, it's a response. It's kind of an affirmation of reality that I want to respond in a positive way to what is real, not to what, just as you just said, what feels good.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what is the truth of existence? And one of the core truths, if not the core truth, we could say the Trinity, the reality itself is grounded in self-gift. And so if we know that truth and we affirm that truth and we say, amen, I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, and the rest of the creed, we're saying that the heart of reality is love, and that man only finds himself through a sincere gift of himself to the other. That's grounded in God himself. And then we see that in the life of Christ. So we have to imitate that if we're going to be fulfilled. And that goes counter to what our society is screaming at us, right? That you go follow your own pursuit, follow your authenticity, And you know, don't be chained down by marriage or old bourgeois Christian morality and those things.
So right. So that's a kind of freedom, but it's freedom from reality, which is really kind of an impossibility. All right, so let me get practical with you then, because one of the quotes you start with in this book, and again, our guest is Matthew Ramage, and the book is called The Experiment of Faith, Pope Benedict XVI on Living the Theological Virtues in a Secular Age. You start with this image that Benedict himself used of what the church looks like from the outside, say a Gothic cathedral looks like from the outside, and what it looks like from the inside. And from the outside, it looks like kind of a cold, dead, dark thing. But you go inside and you see the light streaming in through the windows, and you see the lightness and the beauty of the architecture, and it's an entirely different experience. And so the idea is you have to get inside the church in order to judge whether or not the church itself is truth and goodness and beauty.
That's really well put. Yeah. I mean, you can verify certain things, right? I can track down and say, okay, second century, St. Ignatius of Antioch already has a threefold orders, right? The deacons, the priests, the bishops, and all that's important. And I can verify the authority of the Gospels as being reliable, and that's all legwork. But that only gets you so far, and at a certain point you have to live it. And I like to compare it to, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't like ketchup. I would order a cheeseburger with mustard only. And even to this day, for the record, I still don't like ketchup on my cheeseburgers. But I didn't realize how glorious ketchup was until I finally dipped the French fries in and ate the ketchup. So I tell my kids this all the time, like, you don't like that pork chop? Try it. And so the faith requires that full assent. And the cathedral image is just my favorite, right? So he's in New York City giving a homily in St. Pat's Cathedral. Mm-hmm. And he, I don't know if he comes up with this off the fly or what, but that's the image he used. And I think it's more true now than ever. The priests, you know, pedophiles, people will say, oh, COVID liturgy. It's tough to go to mass and you're wearing mask and you can't sing or whatever.
Right.
But if you commit to everything, right, liturgical life, prayer life, giving the church's challenging moral teachings the old college try, that's all bound up with the experiment.
888-318-7884 is our number if you have questions for Dr. Matthew Ramage, our guest today, about the experiment of faith. 888-318-7884. And I'm going to go to a break, and then I'm be happy to take calls, but I'm also happy to just talk to Dr. Ramage because I love talking with him. But the essential question that I have then, when I hear about this idea that you take from Pope Benedict, and that's interesting to hear that he takes from other contemporary Catholics, this idea of the experiment of faith, is this meant to be essentially an apologetic to the person outside the church to say, come in and try it? You're going to experience something that you don't expect to experience. Or is it a kind of reassurance to the person who's already in the church to say, live it, as you live it more deeply, then it will come alive for you in a way you won't be questioning, well, how certain am I supposed to be? You know, do you see what I'm saying? Who is this for?
Exactly. Yeah, it's for both. And okay. I think in terms of new evangelization, more now than ever, it's our Catholics that are growing lukewarm. Reach out to them, like, hey, come back to Mass, come back to confession with me. Let's pick up a great book on scripture together. There's so much great stuff. Let's download the Catholic Answers app and listen to something together. You know, there's all that I think is probably primary. But also, yeah, there are people who convert from other religions and non-religious situations. So it's nice because it's a universal thing that Christianity has an appeal to everybody. So let's get them in the door and invite them into community, especially into our homes, and have authentic friendships.
Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. I can just hear, as a parent of adult children who do their, you know, they're exploring and they're experimenting and all that. And sometimes tell you things that you don't want to hear about where they are in their faith life and all that. Yeah. I can hear lots of parents like myself now going, oh, is this something that will work if I try this as an approach to my children? Maybe you want to ask Dr. Ramage about that. Whatever question you have for Dr. Ramage, we're talking about his brand new book just out this year, The Experiment of Faith, Pope Benedict the 16th on Living the Theological Virtues in a Secular Age. Again, the number 888-318-7884 back after this with your calls.
Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, this Monday edition. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. Matthew Ramage is our guest. He's got a brand new book called The Experiment of Faith, and it's a fascinating way of thinking about the faith. It's a fascinating way of thinking about the faith because as modern people, we can be, I would say, afflicted with a kind of suspicious mind that how can I ever be certain of anything? What things am I certain of? What things am I not certain of? What's just opinion and what's reality? All of these things are covered in Dr. Ramage's writing, and I have a good reason to recommend the book to you. If you have questions for Dr. Ramage, 888-318-7884 is the number. But there is this kind of, even among the faithful, I guess I would take I know that in your writing you quote Charles Taylor sometimes in his book Secular Age, but he starts that book with this idea that 500 years ago, it was almost impossible not to believe in God. And today, for many people, it's almost impossible to believe in God. That is, around us are all these secular pressures that make it really hard to believe. So is the experiment of faith meant to help us with that?
Yeah, that's why I threw in that subtitle, Faith in a Secular Age. That's a phrase from him that I find helpful, that we think of secular as people don't believe in religion. But the term he uses is trying to say that it's a situation in which there are so many options out there. Faith is literally just one among many options.
Right.
It's not taken for granted like it was, like you said, 500 years ago. And so why should I choose this one among many others? And increasingly, this is what our young people, I teach college students, you know, we're dealing with. So that's what it's about. Why the Catholic faith in particular in this age?
Yeah. So and what does the experiment teach us then? I mean, in a sense, because, you know, when you have the greatest, you know, or at least the most renowned Catholic of the last 50 years, or at least one of them is Mother Teresa. And she spent most of her life in a state of that looks to the outsider like doubt, interior doubt. How is that faith? What can we say now about doubt?
Yeah, one of the greatest things I ever read was her posthumously published book, Come Be My Light, which, as I understand it, she didn't want published, but Pope John Paul said the church needs to hear this. So she kind of posthumously submitted to the Holy Father. I think that's really awesome. And it's so powerful that she did. She would say, are you even there, God? Do you exist? And you know what? She kept praying, though. She performed her duties. She didn't abandon her vocation. She found Christ on the streets of Calcutta during that time. And that can be a real model for us, too. One of the questions you might ask is, well, do I believe anymore? One of the greatest lines I ever heard on that was from Father Richard John Newhouse, who said, well, do you believe? And the answer he gave was something like, well, are you acting as if you believe? In other words, are you committing to it? Because you can't completely understand your own level of understanding. You can say, I accept this creed, and you should say that I believe in one God with conviction every Sunday, even more often. But are you out there trying to live it? I think that's really liberating, that the essence of Christianity, Pope Benedict says, is love. You know, God is love, as St. John tells us, and Christ himself, his cross and resurrection, is the model for our faith. So if you're doing that, you're probably not far from the right track. And that's also a warning to us, because, you know, I could sit there in my head and understand all the doctrines, memorize Bible verses, which is important. But if I have not love, Paul says, I'm a gong. I'm nothing.
Again, 888-318-7884. The number of the book that we're talking about is The Experiment of Faith, the new book from Dr. Matthew Ramage, our guest. And I do want to go to callers because I said I would, so I got to. Tom in Alabama is up first. Tom, your question for Dr. Matthew Ramage.
Hello, sir. I was just talking more on more traditional view of Catholicism.
Yeah, okay. Did you have a question for Dr.?
Sorry. I just made sure you can hear me. The view was that, of course, we all know about the Second Vatican Council and the change into the vernacular form and so forth. My question was ultimately, would the Catholic Church of old recognize the Church as it is today?
That's a great question, Tom. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Cardinal Newman on this, now Blessed Newman. This is a wonderful, important question. He raises this. He said, would St. Peter recognize the papacy? Well, he didn't know the word papacy for sure. But Newman's conviction was always that the church has always had everything she has now in what he calls an implicit way. And over time, he says we have doctrinal development, and there's development and practices. And, you know, if you look throughout the church, you could ask this even 100 years ago. If you go and attend a Byzantine liturgy in Greece, or you go attend a Holy Kurbana, which is the one of the Indian Catholic rites, you may be like, is this the same faith? But ultimately, we have the same creed. We adhere to the Holy Father and the bishops, right? We have valid bishops, valid sacraments. But there's a legitimate amount of diversity within the church as long as you're following those things. So like Chesterton said, the church is like this big playground with high walls. So there's lots of room to play around, but there's also the pillars. But as for Vatican II in particular, which is important, I think you look at that, well, would they have recognized that today? Yeah. And in fact, I see a lot of discussion on the internet about this stuff right now. But yeah, the liturgy and the vernacular, the common language of people, I think would be recognizable. You know, things like the Immaculate Conception. These developments may have been surprising, but they wouldn't have made no sense to them either. I like to think that they might have said, "Oh, I didn't think about it quite that way. That makes sense to me actually." So yeah, I think the Catholic conviction, if you follow the popes like Benedict, like John Paul, is that there's a continuity. And then Francis, you know, I think is relevant here too. Francis does phrase things sometimes differently, but you know, he himself has said that he's in continuity with John Paul and Benedict. So there is a lot of room to debate on the particulars of these things, but I really like to stick with Benedict on how he says the substance of the faith has remained the same. And if I may just leave you, Tom, with one more point, because I could go on for an hour on this good question. John the 23rd, when he convoked the Second Vatican Council, said that the substance of the faith is one thing and the way it is presented is another. So it's really a Catholic conviction that even as the accidentals or certain features are changeable, we have to make sure, are we still affirming the same creed? Are we still committed to the same works of mercy? Are we still celebrating the liturgy faithfully and those pillars? And we can look to the catechism, for instance, as a way to measure if we're doing that.
Thanks, Tom. That brings up a question for me then. Sometimes I think we might think we're doing a service to other people than when we're doing them a disservice. I'm thinking of, say, the Catholic high school that wants to make the faith more accessible to the students and so doesn't teach the fullness of the faith And then the students then never get a chance to try it out, that they don't actually get to do the experiment of the faith because the faith is not presented in all its difficulty and beauty.
Yeah. You know, I would add to that, this may seem like it's not relevant. I think it's quite relevant. There's a doctrine called divinization. St. Athanasius in the 4th century said that the Son of God, Jesus, became man so that the sons of men, us, might become God. So we participate in the divine nature through grace. You don't hear that very often. And I was talking to a relative who made a good point. It sounds heretical at first.
It does.
In fact,
yeah.
It sounds almost more like Mormonism than Catholicism. And the reason why people don't get it is they never hear it. But one of Vatican II's important calls was, in French, what they call a ressourcement, a retrieval of the ancient sources. And so we've done that. And you read people like Benedict, Lubach, Balthasar, John Paul II, go on and on and on. These guys who are steeped in the tradition, but also the modern thinking, they'll say, like our call is to become one. Benedict says, that I discuss in my chapter on hope, that there's no solution, nothing will fulfill us short of divinization. And that's part of the experiment, to think, well, oh my gosh, how far do I fall short of becoming God by grace? Once you realize, oh my, like I'm a sinner, not only do I just need God's forgiveness, I have a lot of elevating that needs done that can only be done through his work. And if that, I find that's such a powerful thought that I reflect upon a lot. And I don't know how you do the experiment, if you will, without knowing about that lofty calling of man.
Right. It's not just Christianity is not just a kind of a nice social program. There's something so profoundly, in a certain sense, disturbing at the heart of it, that if you're not disturbed by it, like I'm not what I'm called to be at all. If you don't experience that disturbance ever, you're not getting it. You're not availing yourself of the experiment.
Yeah, and I'm not here to criticize clergy or anything like that, but you don't often hear these hard moral teachings like the church is teaching on contraception, right? Or the popes teach it, but you just don't get it very much. The truth on sexuality, right? We need to retrieve people like John Paul II, who taught so lucidly on this. And it's countercultural. It's not popular. And you've got to be able to convey it in love. But that's a challenge, you know, when people realize, oh, my gosh, I can't just change my gender. Or, oh, my gosh, I've had students, you know, who are struggling with that type of stuff. And I'm not going to tell them I cease talking to you again, but neither can I condone it, right? So all of us have a challenge in our life. And the thing I like to remind people and remind myself, because I have this really bad lupus disease with all of its effects, is God has a sort of tailor-made cross for each of us. And that's a path to sanctification. And we have to embrace that cross. And what other religion, what other system, what other way of life can proclaim that the path to glory is through suffering? That's one of just the paramount points of our faith that is an apology for it.
As a matter of fact, even that there is a path to glory. I don't, in modern ideologies, there is no glory. There's nothing glorious about it. Just do the best you can, get comfortable, and you know, enjoy your life. There's no glory to be gotten out of the thing. Again, 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. Dr. Matthew Ramage, Associate Professor of Theology at Benedictine College in Kansas, is our guest, and he's got a new book called The Experiment of Faith, Pope Benedict XVI on Living the Theological Virtues in the Secular Age, the idea being that when one begins to live the Christian life, then the full beauty of the Christian life and its relationship to the truth, to reality, becomes visible. And before that, it can be almost entirely obscured by this secular age in which we live. But to help me out with the theological virtues, what are the theological virtues, and what does Pope Benedict mean by living them so that you can experience the fullness of the faith?
Yeah, well, we know of the cardinal virtues and the theological virtues. So the cardinal virtues, justice, prudence, temperance, fortitude, or even in Greek philosophy, there are these habits that build up your soul, like your spiritual muscles that make you a more perfect, fulfilled human being, the person God calls you to be. Now, the theological virtues are habits that God gives to you. He infuses, we say, into you in classical language, faith, hope, and charity. And these unite you directly to God. They cause you to do things that are beyond your nature, not just to become a good natural man or woman, but to be Christ in the world. So they bring you beyond that. So Benedict believes that we're only going to be fulfilled if we live through these virtues.
Let's we got to take a break, as you can probably hear. So let's go through them, each of them, how we live through them, when we come back with Dr. Matthew Ramage right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our number here, 888-318-7884, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. And the conversation we're having is about the new book from Dr. Matthew Ramage. The book is called The Experiment of Faith. Like several of Dr. Ramage's books, focuses on the thought of Pope Benedict XVI, and in this case, the idea of living the faith in order to know the faith, living in order to have faith. So you talk in the part of the subtitle is about the theological virtues, faith, hope, and love. And so maybe you could give us a little insight into what it is that Pope Benedict teaches about these, that's, I suppose, unique about how Pope Benedict teaches about these, the theological virtues, and how how we're supposed to experiment with each one.
Yeah. So when I teach this, say, in a college class or teaching permanent diacon candidates, I do a classic Thomistic approach first. We give the traditional answer. Then I supplement it with Benedict. I find it interesting because Benedict is interested in the lived experience, what we always called in John Paul II's case, a personalist philosophy, a personalist approach. And that's what Benedict does. So he's going to define faith, but then he's going to also talk about the lived experience of it. So, one of the things he does, he quotes Hebrews, that faith is the substance of things hoped for. And in fact, in his encyclical on hope, he says, in a certain sense, faith is hope, because we already possess the things we hope for through faith. And he's just quoting Hebrews 11 on that. So that's one angle. That's his definition. But then what does it mean? What does it mean to believe? And I go through and trace everywhere he's talked about this, because I'm trying to offer the church a service here, drawing together everything he's said into one concise place. So what does it mean to believe? Ultimately, for Benedict, it means I hand myself over. I give myself to the other. I believe in the primacy of the unseen over the things that are apparent and visible. And it kind of reminds me of the way we talked about Mother Teresa, that she dealt with people being baptized. Years and years ago, I read a book, I forgot who, Father Leo Mosberg, I want to say, was her limo driver, her chauffeur. And he would go with her and report her stories. And she was in some Soviet bloc country baptizing kids against the government's wishes. And of course, this was forbidden, so you had to be careful and you didn't have a lot of time. And she told the priest, you ask these kids one question. Do you want to go to the God who sent the sisters to you? And if they answer yes, they have faith. It sounds like it's really simple. There's more to it, right? Because there's a whole life these kids had experienced through that ministry of the sisters. And so there's something similar to be said here too. If you have faith, you're giving yourself over. And that's liberating, because anybody can do it. There's not a very high bar, if you will. We think we have to have perfect clarity. We have to understand every doctrine. But that's not the way most people's experience of faith is. And so I find this to be helpful to sort of ease the consciences of people who are struggling, like, do I still believe or not? Well, do we put our money where our mouth is?
And if we do, then the communal nature of this is striking to me, that if we do, then we make it possible for other people to experience the glory of the faith. In a certain sense, the person who remains kind of in a me and Jesus relationship, not to denigrate that in any way, but is not... It doesn't provide others with a communal place to come experience, to come try this life.
Yeah. And the church, Benedict calls it the ecclesial we. It's not just me and Jesus, the vertical, it's also the horizontal. And I'm always reminded of what St. John says, that if you say that you love God but don't love your brother, you're a liar.
Yeah.
So we have to have both of those running together. And our Christ himself, whatever you did at least to my brethren, you did to me. And so one of the things we see in people like Benedict and even Thomas Aquinas 700 years ago is this notion of implicit faith, that a person already has the roots, or Benedict calls it the embryo of faith, if you're living out charity. And in fact, one of the more interesting things he says, he's trying to build a bridge with Protestants, of course, being German, Lutheranism is very big there. And we know that Luther claimed faith alone. Well, he says, you could understand faith alone as being true if by faith you meant total existence. But then he also turns it around in a great Catholic move and says, but you could also speak of charity alone, because love includes that faith within itself too.
That is extraordinary. That's an extraordinary twist there. Again, 888-318-7884, our number. We're talking with Matthew Ramage about his brand new book, The Experiment of Faith. So part of this then is for us who are within the church, and this experience that we can have of particularly a modern doubt, of this affliction of the modern mind of, I don't know this for sure, and aren't I supposed to know this for sure? And that living makes it possible to know it more for sure. In other words, not. So go ahead.
Yeah, Gregory the Great had a line that says, amor ipse notitias, love itself is a form of knowledge. Now, Benedict had written this encyclical on faith, which he never got published. It had bummed me because he had one on each virtue, theological virtue. Francis published it, so they both wrote it. And he quotes this line, love itself is a form of knowledge. You could ask me all kinds of facts about my wife, and I could tell you those, but you really don't understand how great my wife is until you talk to her and realize how brilliant she is. Like, you know, and you just can't understand that. Or you want to talk to someone who's charismatic, well, you can say how engaging they are, but you have to hear them or you, to see the charity of someone in person and their holiness. There's nothing like it. So
right.
It's not an excuse to not learn your faith. That's assumed by Benedict. We are talking about the former head of the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, after all, right?
Right, right.
But it's not enough.
888-318-7884, the number. But okay, so let me ask you to apply this knowledge for me then in the way that I was talking about before, that it seems to me that one of the things we should be doing as Catholics is inviting other people, come and see, come and try this. But what are we inviting them to come and see? Mass, or are, you know, the some kind of program, or, you know, what is it that we're inviting them to come and see?
You know, I'm going to have to answer this on behalf of a priest friend of mine. He says we need an apostolate of friendship. You know, I'm not pretending this is the end all be all. We do need programs. We do need to invite people to liturgy. But one way to do it, I believe, through experience and on the receiving and giving end of this, is you invite people into community. One of the lines I quote a lot in this book is Benedict liked to say that the true apology, the true argument for the church, is the experience of beauty and holiness. Well, where do you find that? It's the saints. But you know, most people aren't converted by reading a life of Saint Teresa of Avila, great as she is. It's by encountering a Teresa of Avila who works at the bakery, you know? So yeah. You get to know people, you see their witness, and we who are already in the church and trying to live it out, we mutually build one another up. Like Proverbs says, as iron sharpens iron, the brother sharpens his brother man. So, you know, I see my friend's prayer life and I'm like, I'm pathetic, I better up my game. Or I see my friends and how they take their kids out and do fun things with them. It's encouraged me to be a better father. And that same holds true. You know, I've made a little bit of success with the Holy Spirit's grace and just people seeing what we do and thinking, oh, maybe I'm open to a family. You know, we have six kids.
Right.
So like some people might be turned off by it, sure. But, you know, you can't control people's dispositions. But if they're disposed, you put them into contact with Christ and they can encounter the church through you. And you have a pedagogy, you know, a gradual approach that requires discernment. And it's really the Holy Spirit works uniquely through its situation.
Again, 888-318-7884. We're talking the experiment of faith with Dr. Matthew Ramage. We have here at Catholic Answers, we have friends. We consider them our friends, these young women who run an outreach to people who have been victims of sex trafficking here in San Diego. And these are holy, wonderful young women. And my wife, who's a convert to the faith, always says this. And I wonder if this fits with what you're saying. But she says, you know, these women are so attractive to, like, there's no argument against them. There's no argument where the skeptical, you know, 18 or 19 year old who's seen all the YouTube videos from every atheist, there's no yeah. argument there against these women, that's just purely inviting Christianity. And my wife as a convert is like, everybody should be like that. Every Christian should be like that.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh my gosh. I think of lots of experiences like that I've seen with people. And frankly, you know, I want people to become Catholic, but I want to at least get them on a stepping stone of believing in something, because the people are just out there in nothingness right now. So you start to see people who are giving of themselves. Like, look, is there something higher? Maybe some people, that's the place to begin. Is there something you can get out of yourself? And I sincerely believe, and this is integral to Benedict and Pope Francis's teaching on like the environment, get out into the green, you know,
yeah.
get out of our jungle. During coronavirus, we've been going to Colorado and taking road trips. You know, not everybody can hike, but if you get out of yourself, that I've got to believe that makes a big difference, because God's two books, the medievals would say, scripture and nature. So that's one idea that I think is worth pursuing too. And you get out of yourself, you know, you encounter God's creation, you're in touch with the real.
Yes.
That's got to do something.
Right. Yeah. And I'm so glad you said in touch with the real, because this is the other thing too, is that our society is almost, it's a commitment, really. I think I stole this from Anthony Esselin's new book, a commitment to unreality, that you know, you'd rather live in the TV than in the real world. And even, you know, you go from an air-conditioned car to an air-conditioned house to an air-conditioned store to, you know, that there's a certain way in which you really are cut off from those things that remind you that there is a real reality under all this.
Yeah, just in my own life, I'm a big gardener. I have my chickens and things. And if I start getting depressed, like, oh my gosh, these news stories are completely contradicting one another. There's no hope. Catholics are losing their way. I just go out and garden, you know, and that calms me down. I think that I'm preaching to myself and everybody. We can all stand to do a lot less browsing and a lot more being with our family and inviting people in friendship, however we can do during COVID, and just being in the real.
Again, 888-318-7884. We're talking about the experiment of faith. I really do want to ask you about how I, as a parent of adult children who either struggle with or sometimes disappointingly don't struggle with faith, how I can invite them to try the experiment. And we'll get to callers as well. We'll take a quick break. Be right back with more Dr. Matthew Ramage on Catholic Answers Live.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
She is one of the most beloved saints of all time, honored as the saint of the little way.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thérèse of Lisieux entered the Carmelite convent of Lisieux in 1888 and survived only 9 more years. Still, her extraordinary holiness and prayer life prompted her superiors to have her write an autobiography, The Story of a Soul. It became a spiritual classic.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. In a certain way, I feel like the appeal here is a little bit like, please don't be offended, because I'm going somewhere positive with this, not negative, but it's almost like the appeal of the drug dealer, that try it, you'll find out it's life transforming. But the problem with the person who accepts the drug dealer's invitation is, in time, they will find, by the use of that drug, their life destroyed, shattered, and their contact with what's good and wholesome and really truly joyful in life diminished. In a certain sense, there's an element of time to this. That, look, there's a certain way in which, you know, you could say, well, I'm just going to devote myself to making money, and only over time does it become obvious that was an error. And so, someone could say, well, all right, I'm going to take up Dr. Matthew Ramage's invitation, and I'm going to do the experiment of faith. I do think there are certain immediate rewards to that, but there's also the way in which over time the thing proves itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what would I recommend to people? You know, I'm thinking, here's what I did when I was a senior in high school. The only thing I can say, it was the grace of the Holy Spirit, because I thought religion was for sissies at the time. And I was going to visit a college, and my parents were into their faith, and we stopped at a Catholic bookstore, and I bought a little Bible Day by Day book. And I just started doing it, maybe 5 minutes a day. What I was doing without realizing it was meditation. It's not complicated. I just read a little thing and thought a little bit about it. So, you know, you get the Magnificat's a great publication. You know, whatever it is, you just pick up a little thing, have a habit. You could read just the gospel, one chapter of a gospel a day. That's one element to it. Another element, and it gets hard, you know, like I think the church's sexual teachings are probably her most controversial. What if we decide we're going to commit to this and we start using natural family planning? That'd be like really hard. But once you have to put your money where your mouth is, it makes you think a lot more about it.
Yeah, right.
So that's an example that one could do. Or charity, you know, how about I start tithing? Then you're like, oh, I might have to start worrying about where my money goes to. You're forced to reflect upon that or any number of social areas that you decide to get involved in. And a lot of people think, you know, the church is doing all kinds of stuff. So we need to find a way to get into that. And if we have ideas, you know, we can bring those to the table too, because sometimes new ministries spring forth because someone's willing to run an experiment, if you will.
Again, 888-318-7884. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Ramage about his new book, The Experiment of Faith. 888-318-7884. All right, help out a parent of young adult children. And this is not hypothetical. I want to make clear to you, this is not hypothetical. How might this idea of the experiment of faith be presented to young adults?
Yeah, well, of course, my kids are younger, so I'm not entirely credible, Si, but the way I kind of think about this from my experience with college students, and this is not mainly through my doing, it's just through seeing the college itself, is people need friends that they can build each other up with. And you can't make people have friends, but encourage them to get involved with different things. Again, when I was a young adult, my youth minister, Kevin, he kept urging me to go to the youth group, and I thought it was dorky. Well, one day I just decided, okay, I'll do it. And it might have been his sheer persistence annoying me that caused me to do it, like the widow in the gospel. And I just did it. And it turned out it paid off big. And I found out from the inside how beautiful it was. I went on to live at the Newman Center at the University of Illinois and get involved with retreats and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I think about that with friendships and encouraging people. And of course, you know, if one is already doing ministry, that's interesting. Well, download the Catholic Answers app. That might not appeal to them. So finding things that aren't familiar, I assume, would be pretty difficult in that regard. But I really do think encouraging people to have, a daily habit of prayer of some kind is big. And
right.
Like my wife right now has been getting into our friend and local Kansas City, important guy in ministry, Mike Schurzlich, does a rosary, you know. And what it is, it's like he makes up his own meditations. And because rosary can be kind of boring to people, like, oh, I don't want to meditate on the same thing. It never works. But, you know, he's a little bit creative with it. So that's another thing that I think. And then another big one is getting out and finding a way to serve. Figuring out what talent do you have to bring in doing that. So that's some things that I think about anyway.
What do you make of the lay movements of the last, say, 30 or 40 years, that maybe even 50 years, I guess, that these lay movements, it does seem that like the Crucio is a huge thing, or, you know, I could go through a million others, but they seem to have this idea. They actually seem to be the, like lay people just spontaneously creating things that can invite other people to come and try this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happened to me for sure. Koinonia was my biggest thing, which is related to Curcio in college, and it hooked me in. And again, sometimes these things come and go, and the Spirit works for as long as He wants to. But yeah, I really think that human element, that you have this mediator of the church. And that's actually a quote that like Benedict deals with. He's taking on the criticism that we shouldn't have a mediator, it should just be me and Jesus. But as humans and incarnate beings, we need that sort of thing. And I think sometimes also we need to have the sort of mediation, if you will, of encountering difficulties. I grew on fire in my faith in college because we were encountering secularism. And boy, things have changed after 20 years, but we were the Catholics, you know, and the secular academy, and we were probably overboard, you know, too enthusiastic and naive. But now I think, boy, if you want to be ardent in your faith, get out there and talk to somebody who believes something diametrically opposite. I mean, we don't need to elaborate too much, but there is a lot of profoundly anti-Catholic stuff out there right now. And one of the things that can light a fire under someone and maybe make them aware of their beliefs and their importance is to see what happens when you deny this. You know, and so like when I teach Intro to Moral Theology in a class we call Christian Moral Life at Benedictine, I say there are two ways to do this proof, if you will, of Christianity. One is the positive side and the more important one, which is live it out, the experiment. But number two is let's reduce the other to the absurd. What happens if you do drugs, if you get addicted? What happens if you live a life of unbridled sexuality? Well, you get you get all kinds of STDs, right? And you know, you go on, you have these partners and your marriages struggle after that. What happens if you live a life of just selfishness? You're never actually happy. You're just always seeking the next little thing that's going to fulfill you. But it's really the people who are able to get out of themselves, you know, whatever their cause is. And I think that that's something that's really important to realize. Now, unfortunately, you can get on fire for a bad cause too. And
yeah, we see a lot of that lately.
Right?
Yeah.
Tell me about
everywhere.
It. Everywhere. So it's lit a fire under me, and you have to be careful not to be overzealous and turn people off. But it makes me realize, you know, my job, you know, I like to write books, but probably forming my family is the most important, certainly, and probably encountering my college students kind of one-on-one and in small groups and helping them think through this stuff is maybe second.
As a Christian, you know, as the decades roll on and society seems to have a deeper and deeper commitment, and again, I'm stealing from Anthony Esselin, a deeper and deeper commitment to unreality, you think, well, it can't go much farther than this. People are going to have to at some point admit, no, that's not true. That's not real. You know, that the fact that, you know, we deny the existence of the child in the womb, and then we deny the difference between the sexes, and then it just keeps going on and on. There's this continuing unreality, but that hope keeps proving elusive. So yeah. At some point, I wonder if you think that the Catholic life itself becomes so radically different that maybe it has an attraction then, because it's actually so radically different from everyday life.
I don't know who the person was. I saw a story about a well-known person who converted fairly recently because they realized just how ideological certain other things had become. So that could well be. It's going to lead to persecution, of course, too. And we've seen it already in burning of churches and tearing down of statues and stuff like that.
Right.
And we ought not to play the persecution card unless it's real persecution. But yeah, it's on the horizon. We know from Tertullian in the early church that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. So there is something to that element as well. But yeah, I think one of the things I want to add to that is I like to assign this reading from Vaclav Havel on ideology. And if you live under the Soviets, you know about ideology like he did. Well, yeah, basically, in a nutshell, he tells the story. There's a grocer, and is he going to put up this sign? Well, and the sign is a communist slogan. Well, if you don't put it up, you're going to be in big trouble, maybe even dead. If you do put it up, though, you're part of the ideology, he says. And there's any number of areas where that applies today. So you have to be countercultural. And I think that itself, once you've been persecuted a little bit for being countercultural, this kind of goes back to your earlier question, that can light a fire under you. Then you have to watch out that you don't overreact. And I'm witnessing that a lot amongst Catholics, which is disturbing. You don't want to go the other way too far. So,
and become ideologically Catholic. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Benedict has a line for this. He calls it ecclesiastical positivism, where you just go cite something out of context and you ignore like the recent popes or something like that. So you don't want to do that. But it's a very tempting solution, either to just cast off the church or refuse to listen to modernity.
What a wonderful way. That's a great quote that you just ended with. Dr. Matthew Ramage is our guest, Associate Professor of Theology at Benedictine College. I'll recommend all the books, but the newest one is The Experiment of Faith, Pope Benedict XVI on Living the Theological Virtues in a Secular Age. Dr. Ramage, thanks very much. I really appreciate the hour. Thank you.
It was a joy. Thanks, Zach.
Yes, very. It is. It's great to know that the option is still there. You know, whatever else has happened in the world, the option is still there. You still can choose the life of faith, hope, and love. You can do it today, right now, this moment, and try the experiment. Coming up next, Tim Staples. We're going to talk about what the early church believed about Jesus. That's right after this on Catholic Answers Live.